Welcome to PJNet.tv. I'm Coach Prasik, and I hope that you are prepared to really sit back and enjoy our next guest, who is a first-time guest. First-time guest number 376. And I have been so looking forward to this because the topic tonight is one that is dear to my heart, and I think it should be dear to all hearts, because the subject matter is a personal encounter. You're going to hear it, well, you'll hear it, about a topic that it's, I don't want to say it's what has made America great. It has made others know how great America is. And our guest tonight, I am so looking forward to introducing you to Steve Schneider, all the way from the left coast of California, not far south of Los Angeles, I understand. Steve, I am so grateful that our paths intersected, because I am a history buff, particularly when it comes to World War II. But I think I have met my match because I don't actually have any personal experience. I've watched a lot of documentaries, and I've even talked to a few veterans. When I was touring Europe, there were a couple of veterans of World War II on that tour with me, and we did walk the beaches of Normandy together. But that's as close as I got. But you, on the other hand, have kept alive the memory, the legacy, and the honor of some of the greatest generation, I believe, that has ever been to grace this country. Tell us the background. Why would you, of all people, be interested in World War II history?
Well, thanks, Mark. I'm happy to be on your program. It's kind of appropriate since it's Flag Day today. My father was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas, and he flew bombing missions over Europe. And on February 8th of 1944, his plane was shot down, and he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture and eventually made it back to England. So that's how kind of the story goes. My book, though, goes into detail really about what happened to each member of the crew. It's just not about my dad. So it goes into detail about what happened to each guy. Something different happened to each guy. B-17 has a 10-man crew, or had a 10-man crew. Five of the crew came home, but five of them did not. And it's also about the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help my dad and other members of his crew after they were shot down.
So he was on the ground for 7 months. And right. How did, I guess this is in the book. I don't want to give the book away here, but how did he manage to survive 7 months? Did he stay in one place and was sheltered, or did he have to go from like safe house to safe house, so to speak?
Excellent question. After he bailed out, he came down in some trees right at the French-Belgian border, and his parachute got hung up. He was dangling 20 feet off the ground, and he couldn't get down. And but fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgian men, Henri Franken and Raymond Durvan, came to his rescue before the Germans found him. They took him back to the Durvan farmhouse. He only stayed there one night because it was too dangerous with German patrols combing the area. And the following night, a Belgian customs officer, Paul Tilcan, came and got him with a tandem bicycle to take him to a second or a safer location. And after that, he was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed at any given location depended on how brave the Belgian people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might spend one night, he might spend 6 weeks. So a lot of people helped my dad. And he stayed in contact with a lot of them that he spent lengthy periods of time with. But then finally, he got tired of hiding. Word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th, D-Day, and he decided to get back into the fight. Unlike most airmen, before he went into the Air Force, he was in the infantry for a year, so he knew how to fight on the ground. And he decided to join the French resistance and start sabotaging German convoys. So he fought with the French resistance. They were referred to as the Mackie for a couple months. And then finally, when the U.S. armies came up through France after D-Day to liberate that area, he met up with an element of Patton's Third Army and
Wow.
got back to England.
Let me interrupt you just a moment, Steve. We are experiencing some very, very bad weather. Lightning and thunder, the lights are blinking, folks. If our power is interrupted, we'll just reschedule. Steve, I want to hear the rest of the story uninterrupted. But now, it seems to me, help me out here. If he connected with the French resistance, surely they were in contact with the Allies. Was it known that your father had survived and was with the French resistance, or was he still missing in action?
No, he was still missing in action. It wasn't until he got back to England and reported back to his base. He was a member of the 306 Bomb Group based at Thurlow, England, which is about 60 miles north of London. But no word, no one knew. My mother was back home in Pasadena, California, with one-year-old Susan Ruth, and then my other sister Nancy was born while my dad was missing. With the infant Nancy, and she didn't know that if she'd ever see her husband again until he sent her a Western Union telegram from England saying he was back at base, fit as a fiddle, and he'd write soon.
You mentioned some specific names of some of the Belgians that gave aid and shelter and safe harbor to your father. He evidently told you that, then you had the task of tracking these people down. How did you find them?
Well, I really didn't track him down because after the war, he kept in contact with them. They would correspond and send Christmas cards, and he actually took a couple of trips back to see some of his helpers, Jeanette Gadin and her husband Andre and Maurice and Ghislaine Bailleul and some others. And then he, with their, he kept a list of all the people that he could remember anyway, that he stayed with, that who he knew. Sometimes he might have spent one night and not even know who the people were that he stayed with. So I had that list. I'll get one little interesting note that one time on Facebook, I got a message from this 20-year-old girl from Belgium, and Sophie Godry, and asked me if I knew I was Howard Snyder. Captain Howard Snyder. And I go, yeah, I'm his son. And she said, well, my great grandmother hid your dad during the war. And Eva Martin was her name. And I had that name in the list, but I didn't know anything about her. And so Aunt Sophie and her dad, who was the grandson of Eva Martin, they told me of these stories about what happened when my dad was hiding with her. So it's just a combination of things. And information. I couldn't have written the book though if it wasn't for two Belgian gentlemen, Paul Delahaye and Jacques Collot, who were young boys during the war and greatly affected by it, because they saw firsthand the atrocities committed by the Nazis against their family and friends. And later on in life, they became local historians, and they interviewed all these Belgian people and members of the Belgium underground about events that took place involving my dad and his crew, and they documented their testimony. And they gave me unbelievably detailed information that's in the book that would have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a huge debt.
Well, I think we've all heard of the French Resistance, and we know that the contributions they made in the war effort. But you bring out there's another layer back there. These Belgians, and it wasn't just the Belgians, but that we had many friends throughout Europe. When they took in somebody like your father, they were taking their own lives into their own hands. Because would the Nazis had discovered your father, I'm pretty sure that everybody would have just been, well, killed.
So absolutely. As you said, I mean, they risked their not only their lives, but the lives of their family and friends because of the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out about it. They would be arrested, tortured, and either sent to a concentration camp or shot. And some of the people who helped my dad and other members of his crew did meet that fate. They're unbelievably brave people. My dad just really felt like he owed his life to them, and just said that they gave him the majority of the food because everything was rationed and, occupied in the occupied countries, let him sleep in their bed. They'd sleep on the floor, the sofa. And, he was all he can is a couple a few close calls of being captured by the Germans or caught by the Germans that are in the book that are pretty thrilling. Normally, when the underground came across down there, airmen, they tried to get him back through England through various escape routes down through France into Spain over the Pyrenees and then out through British control Gibraltar. But something always went wrong trying to get my dad out, which he became quite frustrated with. I think that's another reason why he joined the French Resistance, which was an unbelievably brave thing to do. Because as you said, if he had a he could have died fighting with the resistance, or if the Germans caught him while he was with the resistance, he would have been shot on the spot as a terrorist.
Yes, summarily executed.
Yeah.
And there are so many heroes that we just never find out about. You know,
Absolutely.
and I am so proud of that generation. And in fact, I think there's been two high water marks in American history, and you know, in the contemporary American history. One is the veterans of World War II, and the other is the people around the NASA and Apollo project. Those were the two bright moments that stand out in my mind. It was a time that we were all pulling together, Steve. And that is something we need to learn from and benefit from, because we're certainly not doing that today.
No.
You have sent an incredible album of photo nostalgia here. And I count. Let's see, three, six, that's 10 people. That would be the crew of a B-17, let me guess.
Right. That's my dad's crew. There were four officers kneeling in front. My dad is on the lower left. He was the first pilot, and as such, the commander of the crew and the plane. And then going across, you have the co-pilot, navigator, and the bombardier. And then the six men behind them are non-commissioned officers and enlisted men.
They're the gunners.
That made up the crew of the Susan Ruth. And as I said, five of them came home, and five of them did not.
There's more, folks. Some interesting stuff here. Apparently, this is a memorial. That the ground looks pretty flat there. So, let me guess, that's Belgium.
Right. Belgium's a unique country. It's divided in two. The upper half is called Flanders, where they speak a dialect of Dutch, Flemish, and then the lower half of Belgium is Wallonia, where they speak French. And that's where my dad was shot down. It's mostly just rural farmland. And they erected this memorial to my dad and his crew in 1989. And like most World War II vets, my dad didn't talk a lot about the war until he and three other members of the crew that were still living at the time went over for the dedication of the memorial. And there he was reunited with all these Belgian people that hit him during the war and revisited places where he was hidden. And that brought it all back, and he started talking about it. And then I made my first trip to Belgium 5 years later with my parents, and that's when it became personal for me.
You know, there was a documentary I was watching. I forget the exact context, but the similarity is striking. In so many ways, Steve, I'm afraid to say that some of the people in Belgium, the Netherlands, and France are more enthused about America than we are when they have those veterans. They are heroes to them, and they are so grateful. More grateful
Absolutely.
than we are here in our own country.
Yes, they are still so thankful and so grateful for the Americans and the Allies coming in, rescue them and liberate them for 4 years of Nazi occupation and Nazi oppression. And they do a great job of educating the younger generations to
Yes.
remember the importance of that as well. When I went over with my dad, they treated him like he was the president of the United States. It was, I get chills just talking about it. It was really moving. They're just wonderful people.
Well, to give
I've
you an
developed
idea, the documentary that I watched, when they had these veterans from the United States come over, they literally closed the schools and made the kids go to these memorials. And I thought, you know, when have we done anything like that here?
Yeah, well, I mean, they experienced their freedoms being taken away. We've never experienced that in the United States. So they know what it's like to lose all their freedoms. And so they really value that and appreciate that and remember that. Unfortunately, there's so many people in the US that, that they've just enjoyed these freedoms and they just take them for granted.
They're entitled, you bet. Well, here we have not just one, but we have a formation of B-17s. I don't see any escort there. Is this just a generic picture, or is this your father's ship?
Well, that was his bomb group, the 306 bomb group. You can see the tail marking. Every bomb group had a letter designation. The 306 was an H, and then there were three air divisions in the 8th Air Force. They were in the 1st Air Division, which was signified by a triangle. And then this has been photoshopped on the tail. That's my dad's actual tail number of his plane and letter of his plane. But those are just some a general picture of some B-17s of the 306 bomb group.
Some stock footage. Now, this is more than about dates and times and events. It ultimately gets down to people. And this fella here seems to be pretty excited about this project. Who is that?
Well, all my dad knew and all the Air Force records showed was that my dad was shot down by two German Focke-Wulf fighters. And that's all I thought I'd ever know. But one day my wife said, "Well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane?" And amazingly, I found him. Unfortunately for me, became a translator after the war and speaks perfect English. And we've become friends. Actually, the gunners on my dad's plane shot Hans down at the same time he shot down my dad's plane. Then he bailed out and made it through the war. This is a picture of him as it as at his apartment in Munich, Germany.
So you've met him in person.
Yeah, I went over actually for the book, I interviewed him through the telephone and email. And then after the book was published, I went over in 2016 and again in 2019 to meet him in person. And he shot down seven B-17s, one Spitfire, and he was shot down three times himself. Almost all his friends were killed during the war. And amazingly enough, of all the people that are involved in the shot down story, Hans Berger's the only one that's still living. He'll be 99 years old this October.
Well, folks, this may surprise you, but it's not, it happens more than you think, that former foes after the war literally became friends. And I think it part of it is there is this camaraderie, this esprit de corps among soldiers that they have a respect for one another. And in the case of German fighters, especially in the Luftwaffe, keep in mind, folks, that they later became our allies post-war in the Cold War. So some of the people that were former enemies wound up literally working together post-war. Amazing.
It was I was so excited when I found Hans. I really felt a kinship with him because World War II was a defining moment in my dad's life. Nothing could match that. In one moment in time, my dad's path crossed with paths with Hans, and so Hans is part of my dad's life, part of his story. And it just was amazing to become friends with him and get to know him.
Who's this?
That's me and my dad at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. My dad wanted to see it before he died, and I accompanied my dad on a to a reunion for the Air Force's Escape and Evasion Society, and we visited the memorial. It was right before the official dedication in 2004. And that was the last trip he ever took. My dad died 3 years later in 2007 at the age of 91. He wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest. And my mother died just 5 months later.
Did they have reunions? Did your father participate in anything like that, or?
Well, he did get together occasionally with his crewmen who survived, and I did meet them, but I was so young at the time I couldn't appreciate who they were. So we had kind of reunions with them, and then he did go to some 306 bomb group reunions. He went to a couple of those, and then other he went to several Air Force Escape and Evasion reunion.
Now, how old were you during World War II?
I was born after the war, so good thing my dad survived, or I wouldn't be here. I was born in 1947.
So, in your growing up years, when did you begin to formulate not an opinion, but an understanding of the gravity of your father's service and how much and how did that affect you?
Well, I knew the basics growing up, but I don't think I really appreciated it until I made that first trip to Belgium with my parents, my mother and father. That's when it kind of started hitting home about what he did. But even then, I don't think it was until I started doing research for the book that I really gained an appreciation for what my father and his crew and all the men in the 8th Air Force, or all the people who served in World War II, the sacrifices they made, and the bravery and courage of what they did to preserve freedom.
So how many siblings do you have, Steve?
The two older sisters, Susan and Nancy.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a moment. Who is this motley crew?
That is a depiction of what the Mackie looked like. They were that wasn't the actual group my dad joined, but it gives you an idea what they looked like. They were small, independent, ragtag guerrilla groups located all across France, and their job was to harass the Germans. They had sabotage railroad lines, disrupt communication, attack German convoys, assassinate German officers, and they got their instructions through the British. Over the BBC through coded messages, and they were also su supplied by the British through airdrops.
Yeah, and the SOE.
Yeah, Special Operations Executive.
Executive. And, an unusual fact of history, and before you judge, you really need to understand many of the French resistance were women
Yes.
who would, let's just say, befriend the German officers. And the pillow talk, would not necessarily have much, but when they got enough of them and put it all together, they were able to weave a tapestry from these individual little threads, and a lot of information was compromised in brothels. And like I say, before you judge, those are warriors too. I know that sounds peculiar, but the role of women in World War II, and of course the code breakers in England, many of them were women. And it's fascinating. Now, I wanted to ask you about your siblings. You said your two sisters are older than you are. Okay, so they know these facts too, right? About your father.
Nowhere near the detail that I do,
Well,
but
therein lies my question. Why did it fall on your shoulders? Or maybe it didn't. Maybe your sisters were more involved than I'm assuming. But when did you get this urge is not the right word, this burden, this mission, to carry on the legacy not only of your father, Steve, but all the great men and women of World War II When did he start taking this serious to the point you said, I've got to go on this mission to take you all to the other side of the world?
Well, I retired from my career profession in 2009, and that's when I had the time to really delve into my dad's war history in more detail. My parents had kept a lot of material from the war years. Two things are really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote about his plane being shot down that he wrote while he was missing in action, which is just riveting. That's in the book. And the other are all the letters that my dad wrote to my mother while he was stationed in England prior to being shot down. And he was really candid in these letters. He talked about what bombing missions were like, what life was like in the air base, what life was like in London and England at the time, escapades of him and his crew. And sitting down and reading those letters, that I'd never done it before until after I retired, was just fascinating. I mean, it's just like my dad was talking to me. And I just became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew, and it became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. It went on the internet, spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. I contacted relatives of all my dad's crew to find out what information they could give to me. I started going to reunions, World War II reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 2 years, or excuse me, 3 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that it needed to be told. So I decided to write a book. You know, I didn't have any background in writing or like that. I always liked to write, but I never had any training in it. But the story is just so amazing, and I had so much material of my dad, other members of the crew, you know, all this material that Paul Delahaye and Jacques Hollot gave to me in my visits, the information that Hans Berger gave to me. So I was just blessed to know so much, and it was, I had just a wealth of information to write a book about, and it's turned out pretty good. It's had a lot of success, and it basically changed my life. I've had a new career now. I go across I attend air shows all across the United States, signing copies of my book, talking to people. I do lots of PowerPoint presentations, all sorts of groups. And it's just been a wonderful experience and so rewarding. I'm so blessed that I have gone on to this adventure. You know, it's too bad my dad and my mother weren't around to see this, but I know that they're looking down from heaven and they're quite happy.
Steve, and we'll turn the mic up. The rain is really pouring down.
I can hear
you. You don't have to answer with any specifics, but, you know, when we go on a quest like you've been on, you know, it's conceivable that we would find out something about our fathers that we would rather not know. You have anything like that? Did that happen to you?
No, I really can't say that. My parents were devout Christians, and prayer got them through the war immensely. I have a little bit section in my book where he and the other crew members started talking about religion. And he was just flabbergasted when he found out my dad's navigator was an atheist. He just couldn't get over that. Like, how can you not believe in God? And there's and the letters that he wrote back, you know, and the ones my mother wrote too, you know, are filled with that, you know, faith and hope that, you know, kind of supported them and strengthened them in being back home and also being over there fighting the war.
I'm going to let you listen to the rain a little bit more again. Yeah. Do you think there was a point, once he connected with the French resistance, do you think there might have been an opportunity that they could have gotten him back to England and he could have taken a safer route?
No, because while he was in hiding, he wrote a couple letters to my mother, but they never got to her. And, you know, the safest thing for him to do was just to stay put in hiding and wait till the U.S. armies came up to liberate the area. But he thought it was his duty to get back in the fight. There are other Americans, you know, fighting, dying, risking their lives. And he thought, you know, he knew how to fight on the ground, and that it was his duty and responsibility to go fight the Germans. I don't know
Well,
how many people would have made that decision.
let me underscore that point, Steve, because would he have decided to somehow rejoin the regular army, which back then the folks, there was no Air Force, it was the Army, Air Force, Air Corps, whatever. Okay, if he would have been captured as a soldier in the army, he would have been treated as a prisoner of war.
Correct.
If he were captured as a member of the French Resistance, he would have, in all likelihood, been summarily executed. He took
Right.
a very risky path. He chose it. And
Yep.
that's why your father and so many others of his generation are really the heroes. They did not look for the easy way out. They did the right thing because it was the right thing to do. So I'm going to turn my mic down so you won't hear so much rain. Tell us a little bit about the book. Is it dramatic? Is there any fiction in it? Is it boring? Is it just a documentary about your dad, you know, and his time in the war? What kind of experience would the reader have reading this book? What emotions are they going to feel?
That's a great question. When I was writing the book, I just didn't want it. I wanted it to appeal to like World War II buffs. But I didn't want it, but I also wanted it to appeal to the general public as well, the people that really didn't know much about World War II or never really had that much interest in World War II. So it's kind of like two books in one. It's the story of my dad and his crew, all based on firsthand testimony by the people who were involved in the events that took place. And I took no, absolutely none. Literary license in that at all. Everything is based on firsthand testimony. I did not want to put my opinion, my thoughts, or anything like that. So that you have the story, and that reads like a novel. I was writing that I would think, God, people are going to read this and they go, how does he know about these details that happened 75 years ago? So the first half of the book builds up to the day that the plane was shot down, and then the second half of the book, it's all about what happened afterwards. So really, most of the drama is in the second half of the book. What I added was just a lot of historical information and anecdotes about and surrounding the war to put it in context and give a background. But it's very personal. There's excerpts from letters of my dad and other crew members from family members. After the plane was shot down, all the wives, mothers, sweethearts, they were exchanging letters, and there's excerpts from them that are really moving. Not knowing what happened to their loved one, praying that they would be safe. So it's a very personal story. And when they're shot down, you feel like you're, well, because my dad's diary, it feels like you're in the plane with them.
Steve, I am awfully proud of your father, but I tell you what, I'm also awfully proud of you for preserving the legacy of that the greatest generation they've been called. And I think
Absolutely.
that is very fitting. And folks, it gives us something to live up to. And it's too bad that we here in our own country don't experience it the same way those Belgians did. Like you so well said, they lost their freedoms and they know. We don't know, and therefore we take it for granted. But may the liberties that we have never be taken for granted, in part because of your father and many of his peers. And I'm awful proud of them, but thank you for making this available to us, all of us. I have put a website up on the screen. It's SteveSnyderAuthor.com. Now, if we continued this discussion another 30 minutes, we probably could not do it justice. We can find out more. What's that SteveSnyderAuthor.com? Well, I guess there's an opportunity to buy the book there, right?
Yeah, you can get an autographed copy of the hardcover book, but it's just a not my website is just not about the book. There's a lot of research information. There's archival footage of the air war over Europe. There's interviews with World War II veterans. There's a lot of research links to go do and find out how to research a veteran. So there's a great deal of information on the website. It's just not about the book itself. There's some YouTube videos there. One that included the interview that I did with Hans Berger on one of my trips there. I made a little 13-minute documentary that it contains some of the footage of my interview with Hans. That's pretty interesting. And just a ton of information on there.
Steve, again, thank you. We're so proud. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that I think it was Joy that connected us, right?
Right.
Joy, help me with her name. Come on. Joy Kidney. Anyway, yeah. She's been on our program. And what a story. And we're glad that you took the time and the effort to tell it. And thank you especially for sharing it here on our program tonight, Steve. You're a real hero along with your dad.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It was such a blessing, a treasure, a privilege, and an honor to write that book. And my motto is, it's our duty to remember. I write that in every book that I sign. And I live it, and I try to project it. And I love doing it. It's my passion.
It is our duty to remember. Thank you. Steve Snyder at stevesnyderauthor.com. That's kind of a mouthful. Okay, you can hear the rain out there. Sorry, I can't do anything about it. This building is insulated, by the way, but it's got a tin roof. Anyway. Folks, I'm so fulfilled. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And it's so fulfilling to have an opportunity for people like Steve to share their stories. And they have so much to offer. And I think each one of us as Christians has so much to offer. And our mission here is to provide a platform for everyday Christians to share their walk with Christ. Maybe your father didn't get shot down in World War II, but God is moving through the lives of individual Christians. And so often we just never know. We just don't know. And it's just an honor and a privilege to be able to share stories like that with you. My week ends on Thursday night, because Steve Hazard's on Friday night. Did I say Wednesday night? Oh, wait a minute. It is Wednesday night. We'll be back tomorrow night with Catherine Pacehour. Now, she has pre-recorded her program for tomorrow night. We hope you'll join us for that. For those of you out there on rumble.com who have taken the time to visit with us, we are so grateful to you. And we just hope that we have lived up to your expectations. We hope that we have offered you a word of encouragement and some good news to put on the other side of the scales. There's so much crap out there. And it's a lot of it's real bad. But there's a lot of real good things going on too. So we want to offer a refreshing look at some heroes, some encouragers, and encouraging news. Before I leave, I want to offer something to you personally that has helped me so much. And it kind of rings true when you, having heard the story we just heard, because doing the right thing sometimes requires courage and bravery. We just heard testimony about that. Well, maybe we're not flying bombers over Europe and got shot down, but there are times when we need to summon some courage. And when I face those times, I ask myself two questions. Here's the first one. What is the boldest thing that you have ever done in the kingdom of Christ? And the second question, when was that? And the challenge is to never be satisfied with either answer.